Is this the same question, really, as why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? Is that?
But why does God allow bad people to happen to good things?
Yeah, Phil says that too.
It's my good feel. It's so tired.
Hi, this is Jason and Mark with Interman Radio.
A free service to thinkers everywhere, demystifying the Bible by asking the questions your neighborhood pastor is afraid to answer.
Mark, this week we're diving into a couple of parables, a pair of parables, actually.
A pair of parables, the wheat and the tares. And we're also going to take a quick little look at the parable of the dragnet.
Right. And there are some similarities between these, but there's some differences as well. Similarities in explanation, but also some differences, though, in application. Is that a fair statement?
I think it is. When Jesus describes the parable of the wheat and the tares, in his explanation, he says he's talking about the world. When he describes the parable of the dragnet, that one is directed more towards the kingdom of heaven or the church.
Right. So if we're going to zoom out and just go big picture here for a second, I'm always good for really bad cliche. You know, that's used way too much.
Okay.
Which makes it cliche.
Do it.
Yeah. 30,000
Let's hear
it. View. 30,000 foot view. 30,000 foot view here. It seems on the surface that we're really talking about the method that God uses to sort the goodness from the badness, right?
Yep, I'd say that's true.
Okay, so but in this, there's some nuance here, and there's also some misapplication, but we should probably just go ahead and read the first parable, the parable of the tares, and then we'll comment on that before we dive into the parable of the dragnet.
Good. So Jesus presented another parable to them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed tares also among the wheat and went away. When the wheat sprang up and bore grain, then the tares became evident also. And the slaves of the landowner came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?' He said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' And the slaves said to him, 'Do you want us then to go and gather them up?' But he said, 'No, lest while you're gathering up the tares, you may root up the wheat with them. Allow both to grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, first, gather up the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them up, but gather the wheat into my barn.'"
Right. So, we should probably just go ahead and let Jesus explain this first, and then we can dive in and comment on that. So starting down in verse 36.
Verse 36. This is one of only a couple parables that Jesus gives us the explanation and helps us sort out the rest. In 36, he said, "He left the multitudes, went into the house, and his disciples came to him. They said, 'Explain to us the parable of the tares of the field.' He answered and said, 'The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. As for the good seed, these are the sons of the kingdom, and the tares are the sons of the evil one. The enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Therefore, just as the tares are gathered up and burned with fire, so shall it be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send forth his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all stumbling blocks and those who commit lawlessness, and will cast them into the furnace of fire. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And then the righteous will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear."
All right. So I've got questions.
All right.
So when we hear parables, actually, you know, any verse in the scriptures can be misapplied to situations it wasn't meant for.
Sure.
And I think there are definitely some applications for this parable that, might be used, but they wouldn't apply. But you help me out here. Maybe as we're rolling through these. So what application might be the blamers? The blamers. Yeah. So blaming the enemy for the tares in our individual fields, because we've talked about the soils in our individual field and attending to our own plot of land and all the things that go along with that. So in this case, the idea that I'm going along here, I'm doing my best to be faithful, I'm doing all the work, I'm taking the baby steps, and Satan planted these bad things in my field.
And okay.
So now I've got all these problems. I've got problems with the missus. I've got financial problems. I've got all these, you know, my problems at work. Nobody likes me anymore. I think I'm going to go eat worms. But by the grace of God, go I.
Mm.
And so as the martyred saint, you would tell me that hang in there, brother. You know, okay, so there's one. That's the blamers.
Okay.
I'm going to get through my other ones here first.
You want it? All right.
All right. Then you get. All right. The other one would be the claimers. The claimers.
See
what we're doing here?
That's good.
Yeah. The claimers.
It's memorable.
Yeah. So God wants to bless you. He wants wheat in your field, Mark.
Uh-huh.
He does not want those tares.
Okay.
And, you know, get the organ going in the background here, you know, get the music going. And maybe it's an enthusiastic minister that he says that he wants to give you a harvest and Satan wants to destroy you. So he plants those weeds. And so what you need to do is to claim your harvest because by naming
it, you should write a book
and claiming it.
Yeah.
You know, it might sell.
Name your harvest.
Yeah, I think. You know, I think Paula White.
Claim your harvest.
Claim your harvest.
Claim your harvest. That's catchy.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, but that, all right. So here's
the third one.
The third one is the crusty generals. So the crust, and this goes back to some Civil War books I've been reading about the Civil War and other time periods. But you've got these guys that, in essence, would just say, kill them all and let God sort them out. And actually, that goes back to...
That's the motto of the Marine Corps.
Yeah. Yeah. Really? That goes back to, actually, Roman days, too. It's an old quote. Kill them all, let God sort it out. And this particular parable could be viewed in that light, okay? But then there's the opposite of the crusty generals, and that would be the appeasers.
Oh.
And that is, we let the weeds grow without any weeding, and God will sort it out. It's not up to us.
What would they say the tares are in that application?
I don't know. You never think past the broad
brushstrokes.
These are broad brushstrokes, okay?
My bad.
Okay,
my bad.
Come on. We're going with the feelings.
Okay.
Here.
Yep.
Okay. So, first of all, I'm fairly certain that these applications are misapplications.
Yeah.
And secondly, they're not only misapplications, they're also misinterpretations of what the parable is meaning. But with regards to this parable, are we talking about personal fields? Are we talking about the field of the church? Are we talking about the field is the world? Hint, he kind of says it's the world. But,
right.
But I mean, there's that. But talk me through the, let's go through the blamers real quick first. The blamers. God has sowed all this bad stuff in my life. And then maybe the claimers. God wants us to be blessed.
Okay, one at a time.
Oh, yeah.
So as far as the blamers go, yeah, you're right. In the explanation of the parable, Jesus makes it clear in verse 38, the field is the world. And he says that the good seed are the sons of the kingdom and the tares are the sons of the evil one. So he makes a distinction between the people here. He's not talking about the field of someone's personal life into which maybe something evil has been sown. He's talking about the individuals are themselves either the wheat or the tares, but they've been sown into the world by the Son of Man or by the devil. And so no, it doesn't work to make the application to my own personal life. The parable of the soils, you can do that one. I mean, that one is about personal life, but this one, Jesus is specific that this is about the people in the world who are either themselves wheat or tares.
Okay, so that gets rid of the claimers too, right? God's wanting us to have a great wheat harvest, and we just need to name it and claim it. Okay,
all right.
Crusty generals, kill them all, let God sort them out. Well, in this case, he's not killing anybody. He's letting them grow to the end. All right. But how about the appeasers? That might be a little bit more nuanced. What do you think?
So if you try to make the case, so who's in the position of appeasing? I think in order to use to try and interpret the parable that way, you have to change the field to be interpreted as maybe the church? Are you saying that they would appease like they wouldn't deal with sin problems in their own personal life?
No,
they wouldn't deal with
good question
problems in the, where are they appeasing?
The church. Dealing with problems in the church, letting the weeds grow with the tares, because
love the sinner.
Love the sinner, excuse the sin. No, hate the sin, love the sinner, but also for the sake of congregational unity, for the sake of not making destructive waves in the church by trying to pull out some that have. But for the sake of the benefit of the church, and we're going to just let things lie. We're going to just leave things alone. Maybe sin that maybe should be addressed, we don't. Mm-hmm. We just let it lie. Maybe some things get swept under the carpet. So there's that mentality of we just want to let, you know, it's not up to us to pull those tares out because it'll be more damage done than good.
Yeah. Okay. So there's two problems with that interpretation. The first is the same problem that the earlier interpretations had, that the field is not the church. The field is the world.
Okay.
And so the parable does not address how to deal with problems inside the church. For those issues, they're dealt with two ways. Some problems inside the church do need to be worked through. So Paul says famously to the Galatians in chapter 6, he says, if anyone's caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual,
restore such a one.
Right.
Restore them.
Gentleness. Exactly. But then at other times, Paul is quite emphatic with the Corinthians in his first letter that you need to cut off ties with this guy in chapter 5 because of his immorality. And the fact that you're going along with it makes it worse. He tells, I believe it's Titus, he says, reject a factious man after a first
and second warning.
And second warning. Right. So in that case, you have both elements, right? It was allowed to go on, like we can put up with it for a little while. But when it becomes obvious that the problem is going to bring them down and it's going to bring down other folks, then we have to deal with that differently. So as far as, you know, just letting it lie, no, Paul is clear, you know, remove the wicked man from among yourselves, but you give him the opportunity to turn it around first.
Okay, so two things that I caught from what you were saying. The first thing is, first of all, this parable is not designed for church discipline.
No.
That is not this parable's. It is that the field is the world. All right?
Right.
And so because of that, but the second thing is you did get into some church discipline there just to kind of clarify a little bit.
Yes.
So, okay. So all that aside, the field is the world. We've got some wheat, we've got tares, we've got the messengers coming at the end to sort everything out. How does this get applied for us today?
Well, the first part of Jesus' parable is that the wheat and the tares are visible, but he's going to deal with them at the time of the harvest. So it's the way he describes it, he says, the slaves of the landowner came up and said to him, when the wheat sprang up and bore grain, then the tares became evident also. So at first, they were indistinguishable, right? The wheat and the tares. Tares is a weed that resembles wheat, but when it's mature, you can see the difference in the fruit. I guess you would call that, what would you wouldn't call it the fruit.
The grain?
The grill. The heads of grain.
Right.
We're so agrarian and it just comes naturally. And I think that really comes through in the podcast.
Definitely.
People can tell that this is stuff we deal with pretty much all the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I plowed my tomato field.
Your tomato.
Okay.
Right. So, but you can't tell, right, which is which. And you can't tell until the time of the harvest. They look the same. And that was the problem that Jesus describes, that tares were sown among the wheat, but it's when the wheat sprang up and bore grain, that's when the tares became evident also. And so when he's talking about different people, it's important to note that people sometimes really surprise you. And the best illustration I know of for this is good old King Solomon in the Old Testament. You can read about him in 1 Kings 11,
verses 6 through 8, Solomon
was great. You mean Solomon that was the wisest man that ever lived?
That's the one.
Whose every word we should hang on because it is, exact right advice for any situation?
For every, yes.
Okay, that one. I'm trying to make sure I got that
right. I detect a little sarcasm and it's well placed. Because while Solomon was wise, he was wise in the way of the world, and Solomon made some grievous errors. Among those most notably were the marrying of all of his foreign wives and the temples that he built for their gods. You can read about that in 1 Kings 11, 6 through 8.
Solomon's a minor detail.
And Solomon got off to a great start, but he really blew it. And at the end of Solomon's life, he recognizes who the Lord has to replace him. It's going to be Jeroboam. And Solomon is actively trying to kill him to preserve the throne for his own heirs.
Now there's that.
Yep.
Okay.
But the reverse is also true with another guy named Manasseh. And his at the end of his reign is described in 2 Chronicles 33, verse 9, and then a little later in verses 15 and 16. And this guy was rotten to the core if you looked at his earlier life.
Mm-hmm.
He does more evil than all of the nations that were dispossessed by Joshua hundreds of years before he comes to power. Manasseh is an absolute dumpster fire. He is a disaster for Judah. But at the end of his life, he has a turnaround. He has a come-to-Jesus moment, and Manasseh turns to God with all his heart. He throws out the high places. There are still some high places that remain, but they only worship the Lord on those high places. He gets rid of the idols, throws them out of the temple. Like, he has a total turnaround. But if I had looked at either of those guys early on, I would have pulled the wrong guy.
Great point. Great point. So that brings up the other point, too. And that is, we're not the ones that are doing the, we're not the ones that are evaluating the harvest and making that decision.
Right.
That's God's decision.
It is.
And we have the entire span of life, however long God appoints that to be.
Yep.
To either make that turn or not.
Yes. Yep. And so God knows when each person has borne their fruit. And so when we stand before the judgment seat, we're going to give account for every careless word that we spoke, for the deeds that we did, because those will be the proof of what we really were. There's a great illustration of that in John chapter 8, where Jesus is having it out with some of the religious leaders. And he said, "You are seeking to kill me, a man who told you the truth." He said, "If you were Abraham's children," he said, "you wouldn't do that." The truth. And so they banter back and forth a little bit more. And then Jesus just comes right out and says, "You're of your father, the devil. He was a murderer from the beginning," right? "You're doing the deeds of your father." And that's what he's talking about in this parable here, is those who are sons of the evil one are in the world. They're sown into the world, but they don't become evident sometimes until the end, just like wolves in sheep's clothing. So then we should ask the question, but why does God allow it?
Why does God allow what?
Why does God allow an enemy to sow tares in his field?
Is this the same question, really, as why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? Is that?
But why does God allow bad people to happen to good things?
Yeah, Phil says that.
It's my good field. They sow tares and
you get to rain on the righteous and unrighteous. But
yeah.
So why does God allow the tares to be planted? He clearly could stop it.
And he could yank them up.
He could do that.
And he does neither.
That is a great question. So do tell.
Well, the tares are planted,
mm-hmm.
and they grow up and they do what they do.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The tares are the tares. The tares never turn into wheat.
No.
They've been a tare from the beginning.
Right.
We don't recognize it, though, necessarily.
Yes.
Okay. So we're not talking about whether or not what we think are tares are tares. We're talking about, in the very end, those things that are determined to have been tares, why were they allowed to be planted there in the first place?
Right.
Okay. I would think it's for the benefit of the wheat in some point.
Well, that's what the parable suggests, right? Because he says, no, if you pull up the tares before the harvest, he said, you're going to accidentally root up some of the wheat along with them. So for the benefit of the wheat, he says, allow them both to grow together. And then we'll sort them out. But it's for the good of the wheat. Sometimes, and I think this is typical, people sort of anticipate that, well, we hear often, the world really needs Christians, right?
Well,
like,
yeah,
of course they do.
Yes, it does.
And they do.
Yeah.
Because, right, Christians have the gospel message. They have the knowledge of God. And the world desperately needs what Christians provide. But the flip side of that coin is also true. Christians need the world. What if we were in a Garden of Eden setting,
mm-hmm,
with no snake?
Everything would be wonderful.
Everything would be wonderful.
Yeah.
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 But where would things like perseverance be, or sacrifice, or how about forgiveness?
Mm-hmm.
But where would those things be?
Mercy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
If everything was all great, a lot of the traits which are necessary for Christians would never develop, right? How about the testing of your faith, James says, that produces endurance?
Let endurance have its perfect work so you can be complete, lacking in nothing.
Exactly.
So really then, the fact that there are tares, tares are kind of they're the opportunity for people to develop the characters of Christ,
yep,
even if they're not in Christ yet. Well, in the end, we're talking about the end of the harvest. That's what things,
yep,
are. Yeah. So the world becomes kind of the staging ground for development.
That's right.
And revealing.
Yeah. So Romans chapter 8 kind of echoes this in a different metaphor. It says that the creation, see, waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God, but it describes the natural world as the womb from which Christians are born. See, but a womb is the place where the child is developed. And so all of the things in the world are perfectly designed by God to build faith in the individual if they will allow it. So if you were to take Christians out of the world and place them in a Garden of Eden setting, their development would largely stop because their faith wouldn't be challenged. They wouldn't have the opportunity to learn how to deal with suffering, how to deal with persecution, how to deal with. And while those things are uncomfortable, they are necessary for the development of the mature person who can determine between the winds and waves of doctrine, the craftiness and deceitfulness of men, right? Because they're full grown, the way Ephesians 4 describes them. They're no longer children tossed here and there about. The tares are necessary for the development of the wheat. And that momentary light affliction, which Paul kind of, you know, wink, wink, is producing an eternal weight of glory. Without the momentary light affliction, there's no eternal weight of glory.
Well, all right. So we talked about two parables, Mark. So
I heard a pair. That's
a pair of parables. The dragnet.
Yep.
And the weeds and the tares. The weeds, the wheat and the tares.
Yeah.
So we talked about a pair of parables here. We introduced.
We promised.
We were in parables. But I'm gonna make an edit. Editorial production decision here. Okay, so we're going to pause on this one because I think that should simmer a little bit.
Okay,
and chew on the things that were just said because some of those things might be a bit new to some listeners. I know when we were first going through this, some of those concepts were actually new to me as well. So let's simmer on that, and let's hit the dragnet next time.
We'll just allow them both to grow together.
Yes.
And see what happens.
And you guys decide at the end which ones you want to pull out or not, okay?
Great. And we'll see you next time
on Inner Man Radio.
Yeah, thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, you can be sure to never miss an episode by visiting innermanradio.org or get automatic notifications on your phone with the Inner Man Radio app. It's available on Google Play or Apple stores.